Morning, everyone. It is Thursday, the 7th of July. Chris, you're on overnight today. What have you got?
Thanks, Ben. It was quite a volatile session on Wall Street overnight. The Dow ended up closing up 70 points and rallied some 400 points from the lows before a sharp fade into the close. The SPY futures this morning were pointing to a gain of 35 points, but currently up around 30. Other headlines overnight, US oil prices settled in a bear market down 20% from the peak. It was the third consecutive session of gains for the S&P and the NASDAQ, although the moves lately haven't been particularly convincing. The Fed meeting minutes pointed to another rate hike of 50 or 75 basis points next month, and the market appeared to like the certainty the Fed is looking to act aggressively to get inflation under control, despite the rising risk of recession. On that front, the odds of recession are now being priced at almost 40%, up from 0% but months ago. In other news, gold down 1.6%, WTI crude down another 1% after the 8% wipeout in the previous session. Base metals were mixed, tin down 4.2%, copper down 1.6% again following a fairly brutal previous session, iron ore down 1%. So all told, commodities struggled a little bit. The other big moving part was US Treasuries. As I said to you younger guys earlier today, you might not see moves like this in bond markets again in your careers. Overnight, the 10-year was up 13 basis points to 2.935%. That's after, as Marcus said yesterday, they had fallen about 70 basis points in the space of a week.
Very nice. Thank you, Chris. Tom, what have you got for us from the ASX today?
Thank you, Ben. Well, our market having a good start to the day, up 29 points. Miners and consumer discretionary names are outperforming. BHP and Rio both up nicely. Most sectors are improving. Healthcare and tech stocks, though, are falling behind. Block down 2%, Zero down 1.5%. NAB is the only major bank in negative territory. And on the banking front, Bendigo has acquired ANZ's investment lending portfolio, which is worth about $750 million. Crown has announced the CEO is going to step down, and Dye & Durham has lifted its bid for Link to $470. So Link is up 7% on that news. And GrainCorp is apparently still looking at an acquisition of Ridley Corp. So some speculation around that.
Good stuff. Thank you, Tom. Leighton, what's happening with the brokers?
Thank you, Ben. UBS has lifted its Brent oil forecast for 2022 to $104 a barrel. And they've also lifted forecasts through to FY25, which has driven earnings per share increases across the entire sector in the range of around 8 to 25%. This comes despite Brent crude having fallen over 11% already this week. And so UBS has upgraded Woodside Energy, that's WDS, to a buy. The broker notes that Woodside should benefit from higher spot LNG prices, with forecasts for North Asian spot LNG lifted by an average of 40% through to 2026. The target price for Woodside has increased to $34.25, up from $32, which implies around a 13.5% upside. And they've also got a buy recommendation for Santos, and Santos remains the broker's sector pick, but the target price comes down to $9.50 from $9.70. That still implies around a 35% upside. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Leighton.
Worth mentioning that Woodside or upgrades, a lot of analysts work off spreadsheets and assumptions. Sometimes their assumptions are delivered to them by a strategy person or an economist that works in the group. UBS would be big enough to have that. And so when their strategist suggests or their economist suggests the oil price is going to go here, they have to feed it into all their models and they end up with recommendation change. But what is obvious here is that their economist or whoever's come up with their oil price forecast is woefully behind the curve. And here they are upgrading WDS, possibly the worst possible time after the shares have already performed extremely well and the oil price is peaking. So just wanted to explain how some brokers work, which is assumptions are delivered to the individual analysts who then have to respond. So the oil guy was probably sitting there last night doing his numbers going, oh, God, do I really have to do this now? Put a buy on Woodside right at the top type of thing. So anyway, that's probably what's gone on there.
Very nice. Thank you for that extra little bit of detail, Marcus. Henry, what have you got for us?
Thanks, Ben. Just talking today about the resource trade, because there will come a time when it is right to buy resources. Interesting that some of them are starting to do relatively well today. The likes of Chalice, which we hold in the small cap portfolio, is up 14% on some good drill results. So It's not game over by any stretch of the imagination. And bear in mind, the yield on BHP could be as high as 10% fully franked. So there are some attractions and we are seeing some support coming in for this sector. And commodity prices have stabilized, if nothing else, although there are a few outliers like nickel, which is still on the nose. But BHP, remember, is not just an iron ore stock. It is also a met coal stock. And coal has been doing quite well for BHP in recent months. So something to consider. Also, just in lithium, which everyone knows that I am a fan of and continue to be a fan of, and at some stage we'll go back in and buy a lot more exposure to lithium, but it remains to be seen at what price. But Tangjin, which is one of the biggest lithium miners in the world, which has extensive interest in Australia through IGO, Independence Group, which was now called IGO. They have a big interest there. They raised $1.7 billion US on the Hong Kong market for their IPO, which was at the top end of the range. So that was a slight vote of confidence. And also just a few links to the call and also the investment committee, which I did last week, which was released on Tuesday, if anyone's interested in that. And off to the Sydney Mining Club this afternoon to hear all about tungsten.
And sorry, Henry, have we mentioned already that you recovered your On the Couch podcast?
I did recover my On the Couch podcast. I sent it over to the legal team at the fund manager last night so they could go through it and make sure that my guest hasn't said anything that he shouldn't have said. But having said that, when I realized that it had disappeared from the cloud, I did actually listen to another podcast that he did, and I've summarized some of his points that he made in the previous podcast. I would give you a link to that podcast, but I'd rather you listen to mine, to be honest, which I think is far more interesting. But it is a sobering, I guess, podcast on some of the risks facing the global economy and the markets. It's not as a recommendation, but it does give a sobering look at what could happen. And I have to say, so far, Julian McCormack has nailed it. So it's certainly worth a listen.
Very much looking forward to that. Thank you, Henry. Fresh ideas today. Chris, you've got a chart for us.
Thank you, Ben. Yes, just taking a look at Amcor, which in this beaten down market, I think is still one of the best looking charts going around at the moment. AMC has held up very well in the economic conditions. They've been very good at managing their raw materials and general inflation costs, and that's allowed it to continue delivering both consistent earnings and stable margins. They've also been able to pass on higher costs to their end customers because they have a very dominant market position. In their third quarter update, they had pricing growth of 11% for their flexibles division and 14% for their rigids, whilst volume growth remained robust. The brokers generally like it. The target prices are a little skinny, sort of 2% to 10% above the current market price. But I am rating this one a buy with an upside target towards 20 bucks.
Very nice. Thank you, Chris. Tom, you've got a fresh idea as well.
Thank you, Ben. Yes, I'm looking at ARB today, and the stock popped up on a bit of a technical scan. It's up 16% in the last 2 weeks, which is doing okay. A new CEO was recently announced. The brokers like it. Goldman had an upgrade recently. The average broker target price implying upside of more than 30%. The main takeaway, however, is that it's still carrying a bit of risk heading into results given the discretionary nature that it operates in and the slowing new car sales. So best to wait until results before making a decision.
But that's a stock that's come down from a PE of over 40 to a PE of under 20. So it's one of those darling stocks and darling sectors during the pandemic, wasn't it?
Very nice. Thank you, Tom. And Marcus, you got a fresh idea as well.
Well, it's not really a fresh idea. It's a fresh list. I just dumped in the RSI buy signals. And at the top of the list there was Westpac. I'm not sure we should be necessarily buying the banks, but interesting to see them firming up a little bit. And the other one was I put a list of very oversold stocks, those with RSIs below 20. I noticed Mineral Resources is on there. And lastly, there was a scan for what is amusingly called possible Bollinger Band buys, which in other words is stocks that have been absolutely smashed and have dropped below the bottom Bollinger Band, and rename those really crap stocks because they performed terribly. But interestingly, Rio was on the list. And as Henry said today, at some point this sector will turn around again. It's oversold on a weekly chart, which is rare. So at some point there is going to be a resources buying opportunity. Not sure it's necessarily today, though. Obviously there are.
Very good. Thank you, Marcus. We've got our long-term investors section in today, which of course a feature every Thursday now. Myself, Chris and Tom putting that together. We're making one change to the Forever portfolio this morning, selling AFG, Australian Finance Group. They're a non-bank lender specializing in residential mortgages. One in every 10 Australian residential mortgages are written through an AFG broker. So they've got quite a large share of the market there. mortgage rates have been suffering as we hit the slowing growth, higher interest rate environment. We've got a chart in there showing how they've started to plateau and even turn down. The company recently lost the DFO. It'll be facing some decent losses from its $15 million investment at the end of last year into Vault Bank, which closed its doors last week. So they own 7.6% of that. It's not going to be worth a whole lot of a bank that doesn't do any banking. And the share price has been trending south for quite some time, down 42% since the start of the year. And now the company has a market cap of less than $400 million. It's got some reasonable fundamentals, decent ROE. Its PE's been cut in half thanks to the share price drop. Its yield is very attractive thanks to the share price drop. But for a growth-orientated portfolio like the Forever portfolio, it does not cut the mustard anymore. So it is being chopped today. We've also got our look at the last week in the portfolio. No other changes outside of AFG. Our main concern, similar to the income portfolio yesterday, August reporting season, holding the iron ore miners, and also energy exposure, which we are underweight, having cut a couple of weeks ago significantly. So happy to have done that, but still with the energy sector turning off so sharply, that is a concern. Our performance has been in line with the market over the last week. Upcoming portfolio events we've got in there. And Tom's done a bit more of a detailed outlook of what is happening for that portfolio over the next little period, what we're looking out for. And then we've also got our portfolio x-ray, which we have changed from the quality versus value table that we had last week, and we have the income portfolio, into a quality versus momentum table, which is a little bit more appropriate for the growth-oriented Forever portfolio. And the most interesting thing there, which is part of why we're chopping AFG this morning, is AFG is the big ugly outlier on that chart. Pretty much everything else is top right, which represents a good quality rank and a good momentum rank, which is what we like to see in a growth stock. It's what Stockopedia call good leading stocks that tend to outperform, while AFG is down towards the bottom left corner. So good piece of supporting data for that move today. Because we have changed the table we're looking at there, I've also got in the description of what goes into the quality rank and what goes into the momentum rank. So if you're interested in that, you can find that on the website as well. You can also check out Stockopedia for more details on that. There's a little blurb in there about what we're doing with them and a link to our discount that you can get to sign up for Stockopedia. That's about that for the Forever portfolio. Just quickly before we pass on to Marcus, we've also got a Retirement Today article in there today from Harold. He's talking about Paul McCartney playing at Glastonbury and Warren Buffett still kicking along, with a general message of there is no use by date on your career. And if you love your job and you love working, why would you retire? So it's an interesting read there. Thank you, Harold. And that's all we've got there. Marcus, what have you got for strategy?
Strategy is pretty easy. We've got the CPI number coming up next week, and there are some signs that supply chain problems appear to be peaking. And I've listed some evidence of that in the strategy piece today. Things like the gasoline price in the US falling for 21 days on the trot, the oil price obviously come off the top. But in particular, I've looked at today, and I won't run through it all because it's a bit of detail, but explaining global supply chain issues, the main problems are one, higher logistics costs, and two, longer delivery times. And there are all sorts of ways you can measure those. But one of the developments the newswires have picked up overnight is transportation costs within that index have fallen to a two-year low. In other words, some of the supply chain issues, particularly logistics costs, appear to have come off the top already. And the main issues for logistics and delivery times, or delivery costs and delivery times, has been recently Russia-Ukraine conflict and Chinese lockdown. So there is some easing of those. And these are precursors to inflation peaking. So we've got the inflation number coming up. The bond market is suggesting that the inflation peak is already here. And rather amusingly, the FOMC and the RBA and most central banks woke up this year to the fact they were hopelessly behind the curve on inflation. And it may well be that just as they get aggressive on rates, they find themselves hopelessly behind the curve again because inflation comes off rapidly. And here they are still with three or four interest rate rises in the pipeline, in which case they may well cause a recession unless they back off. Anyway, we'll see what the CPI number says next week. But there is just a chance that it does show some peaking. It isn't like last month's, which was a bit higher than expected at the headline. It comes off, at which point we might start talking about the central banks and the Fed in particular being less aggressive, the chances of a 75 basis point drop. And before you know where you are, bond yields are coming off. and the market is bottoming on recession fears and inflation fears, which could steady the market. So I've not been sucked into buying anything yet, despite this mild bounce in sectors like the tech sector and the consumer discretionary sector and interest rate sensitive sectors that we've seen in the last week. There has been some bottoming, but haven't been sucked in yet. I think for any bounce to be sustainable, it has to be backed up with some sort of macro improvement. Let's see what the CPI number does next week.
Very nice. Thank you, Marcus. And our question today, which we were just discussing in the office before the price that was on the last Warren Buffett lunch, which was
$19 million US, $27 million Australian, apparently his last lunch, auction lunch ever.
So guessing it's not going to be that high, but how much would you pay for a lunch with Warren Buffett, or if there's someone else that you would prefer that to? Tom?
I don't think I'd pay much at all for a lunch with Warren Buffett. I'd rather pay to see Jack Dorsey, who was the ex-Twitter CEO and internet entrepreneur who's worth about $7 billion. I think he'd have some more insightful and more perhaps relevant comments for me.
I think you'd have a very different lunch on menu between Buffett and Dorsey.
What do you think Dorsey would be eating?
I think Buffett's a Macca's three times a day person. Yeah. I think Dorsey would be more
kale and
maybe something that grows in a tree that you've never heard of before.
Something real pretentious like a pear or something like that.
Layton?
To put a number on it, I think I wouldn't spend any more than $5,000. I think that's probably where I'd put the limit. It would be more of a, I don't know, almost a novelty sort of thing, just to say that you've done it.
Very nice. Henry?
I wouldn't spend a lot of money on Warren. Most of his sage advice has been well and truly reported over the years. If I was going to spend any money on anyone to have lunch with, I'd much rather have lunch with Mick Jagger. He is, I suspect, one of the great businessmen in rock and roll. He is a graduate of the London School of Economics and has managed that band extraordinarily well. And I'm sure he's got far better stories to tell than Warren Buffett has.
Chris?
Yeah, I would like to have lunch with Warren. I'm not going to lie. Putting a number on it is pointless. And outside of him, it would be James Gorman from Morgan Stanley would be the other person that I'd like to have a financial conversation with.
Very nice. Marcus?
I think I would spend the advertising budget of Marcus today on it, because I think it would probably be worth it from a commercial point of view. So what would that be? A couple of mil? But it would obviously be for corporate value to us. So yes, probably spend quite a bit.
Very nice. And I'm similar to Leighton. I think about $5,000 or $10,000 would be about the max. And then beyond that, there's things I'd much rather spend that money on. So,
but I'm with everybody. I don't think we get anything out of him that would be worth anything other than the ability to tell everyone we had lunch with Warren.
Yeah. Yeah. A bit good story. If you had the money.
Good story.
Very good. Thanks, guys. See you tomorrow.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.